introduce our first speaker, Tracy from West Side.
Harlem first. Hi.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm Harlan. I'm an addict.
Hi, Harlan.
What an honor and a privilege to share at this meeting. I have something specific I wanted to share, but I want to first. How long do I share for? Roughly what? 20 minutes? 15 minutes? How long? 20 minutes, more or less? Okay. There's something specific that I wanted to share about, in order to provide some context for what I want to share, I want to tell you a little bit about who I am. I know some of you in the room, but just to give you a little background on where I came from. I'm the youngest of three children. I'm the only boy. I have two older sisters, both of whom are significantly older. One is 8.5 years older, the other one is 10 years older than me. I grew up in a traditional middle class Jewish family. And the cliches, to a certain extent, are all true. There were certain expectations of who I was going to be when I grew up. I was going to be some kind of professional, doctor, lawyer, accountant, dentist. I was going to be married, and I was going to have children. And I didn't fit that prescription. In fact, I grew up really confused, trying to fulfill this prescription. And, you know, my sexuality was a mystery to me. I never had the talk with my dad to tell me what was up. The only conversation I ever had with him, it was kind of like sex was a taboo subject in my family. And the only conversation I ever had with my father was when I was in high school. And I had a condom which was in my wallet, and it had been there so long it had formed an outline on the outside of the wallet. And my father saw it, he pulled me aside, and he said to me, "There's something in your wallet that I don't want your mother to see." That was the end of the conversation. So it wasn't until I got into middle school when we moved to the suburbs. My parents were children of the Depression, but they had managed to, by the time I came along, to claw themselves into the middle class. And they bought their first house when I was, I think 12. And we moved to the burbs. And there I hung out with a group of boys in the neighborhood, and that's where I first had my first sexual experiences with them. But again, those expectations that I felt were really strong. And as a consequence, I've been married to women twice. Had a long-term boyfriend in between those two marriages, and now I'm married to a man.
Yeah!
So the second marriage in particular was brutal. I met my wife through business. She basically stole me away from my boyfriend. I think the reality was that I was feeling the biological clock as well and wanted children. And as we were getting, we went to a marriage council. Marriage council said, "Don't do this. This isn't going to work." But we convinced ourselves that we were in love, that this was going to work. And so we went ahead. But before we got married, my then wife or future wife said to me, the only thing I ask is if you're going to cheat on me, I don't find out about it. And that to me was license. So I proceeded to cheat on her like crazy. But what I didn't understand is that she wasn't just giving me permission. She was giving herself permission. And the marriage ended when I discovered that she was having an affair with one of our best friends who happened to be the OBGYN who delivered our baby.
Oh, wow.
Can't make this stuff up. And here's another thing that I've learned in recovery, one of the lessons I've learned, is that sometimes things that seem to be bad turn out to be really good, wind up in a really good place. So what happened is we had a child, a daughter. And I have to tell you, one of the great experiences of my life was being this child's father. And she turned out to be an amazing person. You know, I brag on her all the time. She became a Navy SEAL. Until she got pregnant. And now I have a granddaughter who's 2.5. And they just moved, she and her husband were redeployed to a new location. They were in Hawaii. They're now in San Diego. They just moved there last week. So I'm really excited about that. The thing that I wanted to talk about is how I identify. Obviously, I identify as an addict. I refer to the reading, one of the readings, the NA program, which specifically says that we make no distinction, that everyone is welcome. Age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion, doesn't make any difference. All we need to do is identify as addicts. And that's it. However, my experience has been, my recovery began in Hollywood. I came in through the therapeutic community, through the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, who at the time, I don't know if it's still true, but they had a really active and effective addiction recovery program. So they brought me in immediately for an intake. They got me with a therapist. And the therapist that I had, who was in North Hollywood, she was the one who got me started, encouraged me to go to meetings. I tried some substance-specific meetings, didn't really relate. But then she pointed out this meeting that was just up the street from her office on Friday nights, an NA meeting. And she said, why don't you check that out? And I did. And I felt immediately at home. You know, these were my people. And people introduced themselves to me, gave me hugs, gave me phone numbers, told me about other meetings. And in fact, there was another meeting that happened the very next night in Hollywood at BHS, for those of you who remember. It was at that meeting, that very first meeting, I heard a speaker share something that literally changed my life. And here's what happened. The speaker, for those of you who remember him, Ray Dean, one of the OGs of NA in Hollywood. And he was sharing about the latter stages of his using, in which his life has gotten very small. It basically had been reduced to one room with the blinds drawn, him alone with his drugs. That was it. And that caught my attention because that's what my life was. And he said he felt like he had this hole inside of him that nothing would fill up. Drugs, no. Shopping, no. Food, no. Nothing would fill it up. And that really caught my attention. I never heard anyone describe it like that, but that's exactly how I felt. And then he asked the question, do you know what that hole inside of you is? And now he's really got my attention. He said, it's your separation from God. Wow. And I can't explain it. I mean, you know, I say the words, but the effect was like a transformation. I immediately felt different. I felt filled up for the very first time. And I couldn't explain it. But at that meeting, at that same meeting, I met the man who became my first sponsor. And again, for those of you who remember him, Ron B. I love this man. It's the most intimate relationship I had ever had in my life up to that point. There was nothing physical or sexual about it. But he knew everything about me. You know, I did, at the time, a reasonably honest fifth step with him. He had a wicked sense of humor. I'll just tell this story because it's funny. When I was about to do my fifth step, he said, you know, he suggested, I said, you know, I know where we should do this. Let's do it at Forest Lawn. And I thought, oh, okay, Forest Lawn. And I didn't get the joke. I thought this was about burying the past. No, it was about digging up the bodies and exposing them. In any case, I went all in. I did the 90 and 90. I worked the steps, and I was of service. My life was transformed. But the question that I'm left with is still, how do I identify? I mean, obviously identify as an addict. But I'm reminded in terms of identity, the story of when the astronauts first went up into space and they looked back at the Earth, they got it in a way that like no one ever had before. What they saw was this beautiful blue planet with nothing else like it around. And more importantly, there were no lines. There were no demarcations. It was all one. And I kind of feel that way about my identity. You know, I'm rather than saying I'm this, I'm that, I'm my own identification. I'm my own identity. And my sexuality, my relationships, they're only one part of me. They're not the whole thing. So, last thing I want to share, I don't know how much time.
You have one second.
How much?
Hold on. You have 10 minutes.
10 minutes, oh, well, oh, in that case. I want to go back to how we identify that this meeting exists, the LGBTQ meeting. And in Hollywood, my recovery, as I said, started in Hollywood. And I went to what I believe was the very first NA gay LGBTQ meeting in the world. And it was a meeting that was associated with the Gay and Lesbian Center. It had originally, the meeting was at the old location, which was on Highland. And then I never went to it there. But then it moved to Schrader. And at that meeting, I was a secretary of that meeting, and then later on, I became the treasurer. Then when the village was built, the meeting moved there, and it was controversial because I don't know if you've had this experience, and I don't know if it's changed at all, but soundproofing was not one of the strong suits of that facility. The walls did not go all the way up. And in fact, the other issue was in the central area, this kind of open area, which you had to go through in order to get to the meetings, there were often various kinds of events and receptions of one sort or another. And at one point, we were leaving the meeting, and there was a reception going on, and there was a guy at the door, the exit door, handing out gift bags. So we all took one. And in the gift bag were little miniature bottles of alcohol. So the meeting, it became an issue. And the possibility was raised that maybe we should move the meeting to a new location. But there was also strong opposition to it because of its long association with the Gay and Lesbian Center. And we did something, this is also one of my pet peeves, a violation of the second tradition, which says that the only authority, I'm paraphrasing, the only authority is a loving higher power as he may express himself in our group conscience. And specifically, if you read it, and if you read the tradition and it works how and why, it says specifically, when we're dealing specifically with a controversial issue, we do not take a vote. We continue to talk about the issue until a group conscience emerges. But we violated that tradition, as that tradition often is violated, and we took a vote. And a majority of the people in the meeting voted to move the meeting. Well, it gave rise, you should excuse the expression, to a fuck you meeting. We moved to, the original meeting moved to BHS, and then another meeting started at the same time at the original location. I understand why it is necessary for us to have meetings that address specific subgroups of addicts, but I think here's the part that I hope this is controversial, or at least I'm going to say something that I think that the goal ultimately is that we don't need these kinds of breakout meetings, that we all treat each other as equals. I understand that we live in this part of the world in a privileged place in many respects. I went with some people in this room to the World Convention in Barcelona, and there was, in fact, a speaker there from Iran, a woman, and she told us that even though NA was there, there were never any mixed gender meetings. There are either women's meetings or men's meetings. And I'm sure that in other parts of the world, the level of understanding and acceptance of us, LGBTQ, has not advanced far enough. But nevertheless, I think we should aspire to it. And I hope that at some point we will all be able to simply to identify as addicts. That's it. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Heron.
Tracy.
Why am I? Okay, it's backwards. Tracy. Don't have my glasses on. Just kidding. Tracy.
Thank you. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I'm Tracy and I'm an addict. Hi. Woo! Okay. I've been dreading this for like months now. I'm like, no, why are they asking me? I want to thank the committee for trusting me to be the speaker. What an honor. You know, I have almost 32 years, and next month I'll have 32 years. Thank you. Thank you. So, and I've never spoken at like a convention or anything, or even, you know, this kind of little breakout group. So, yeah, thank you. All right, let's get to it. I always start with this because it just really helps me to ground and really know where I came from and who I am. So when I was a kid, when I was a little girl, I was like this bright little smiley girl. You know, I had this big smile. When I walked in the room, people noticed, you know, they're like, oh, that kid's so cute, you know, and I walked around and I knew it, you know, and everyone would say how smart I was, and, you know, I was just this bright little light, you know, and I walked around radiating that, you know. And then I went to school, and all of a sudden all of these differences started to appear, right? I knew I was a girl, but then I started finding out that being a girl wasn't cool, you know, because girls didn't get to play basketball, they didn't get to do all of the things that I love to do, you know, like that was like, no, you need to cross your legs and wear your dress and, you know, be a lady. And I was a rambunctious little one, you know, who was just, you know, being a kid. And so then it was like, huh, okay, that sucks, you know, I'm a girl. And then I found out that I was black, and I was like, you know, it's like, I knew I had this beautiful brown skin, you know, I knew that, you know, and my family had it, and I didn't think that there was anything wrong with it, and I still do not, but then all of a sudden, you know, I started hearing things like, being black wasn't cool now, you know? And I watched television, and all of the television shows were like, you know, Good Times, and like all these shows that, you know, showed black people in a different, you know, like we were a monolith, like all of us lived that way, you know? And so, you know, I started to think, huh, okay. So being black isn't cool either, you know? And, you know, and, you know, I had a gap, I still do. And and then that was a problem. You know, it was like all of these things. And like this little bright little girl started to dim and dim and dim, you know? And then later I find out that I like girls. Like, I didn't know that. You know, and I dated boys at first because that's what you're supposed to do, and I found that I didn't enjoy boys. I thought they were cool, you know, we could play basketball, we could do all those things, but I wasn't getting what my girlfriends were talking about. Like, they were like, oh, I love him, and da-da-da-da-da, and I was like, he's all right, yeah. You know, and I had a lot of boyfriends. I had a lot of different boyfriends because I had one at church, I had one at school, I had one in Pennsylvania. I had all these, like, different boyfriends, you know, and I didn't really care about them. And I think that's why they liked me. Yeah. And so then I found out that I liked girls, and then that was weird because, you know, I think I was in church, I went to church with my mom, and somebody was saying something that it was an abomination that a woman would lay with a woman or a man would lay with a man, you know, it was an abomination, I was like, whoa, you know? And then it was a sore in God's nose, is what they said. And that did not sound cool. You know, like, damn. So now I'm a girl, I'm black, I'm a lesbian, I'm a sore in God's nose. I have a gap. And I also didn't grow up with a father. My father was in Vietnam. And so when my father left, my father was a person. And when he came back, he was a shell. And he wasn't fit to be a husband or a father. So me and my mom moved to California when I was 3 years old from Philadelphia. And all of my family was there too in Philadelphia. So I was by myself. You know, it was just me. This cute little black lesbian, what was all the things that I have? The gap. And a girl. Yes. So I was all by myself. I didn't have cousins. I have nothing. You know, and that light just kept dimming and dimming and dimming, you know. And by the time I got to some drugs and alcohol, it was like, you know, all of a sudden I wasn't that black girl, I wasn't that gay girl, I wasn't that, you know, just weirdo, you know. And, you know, I got into it, you know, I got into the drugs, I got into the alcohol, that was my thing, man, it was my relief. And, you know, my mom was, she's a really anxious person, she hid more than she would, you know, we didn't talk about things, it was like, shut up, sit down, listen, she would hit me. So I had that too, you know, where it was just like this beat down, this breakdown, that I wasn't worthy. You know, that was the main thing, is that I kept hearing that there was something wrong with me, that I wasn't enough, I wasn't worthy, you know, and I drank and I used in that way. And I put myself in a lot of situations where it was unsafe for me, you know, but I didn't care, you know, I didn't care. And, It's weird to like think back to all these things that I believed, you know, like I seriously believed that there was something wrong. And you know, through all the using and everything else, you know, I ended up getting arrested and going to jail. And I went to Santa Monica jail for 5 year-like days. I was across from these prostitutes. Oh, and I forgot, I was a vegetarian as well. Yeah, so that was also a weird thing. And I was across from these prostitutes in this other cell, and, you know, I thought, well, you know, we're going to go to the big woman's jail, so I need to make friends. And I didn't eat my meat because I was a vegetarian. So when the trays came, I offered my meat to the girls across the way. And so every time the meals would come, they'd be like, Tracy, give me your meat. Okay. So I would give them my meat, you know, thinking like, these are gonna be my homegirls when we get there. Cause you know, I'm not the type that, I wasn't going to be fighting. I mean, I would fight if I had to, okay? But that was not like my thing. But luckily, I was offered to go to treatment or do 2 years in civil brand. That was the jail back then. And so I said, I'm going to go to treatment. And I had already been in a rehab before when I was 17 years old, and I got clean when I was 23 years old this time around. So I've been clean for almost 32 years.
Yeah.
I'm an old lady now. It's weird because, like, when I came in, everybody was old, right? Everybody was old and white and straight. That's the way it was, right? And then, you know, and now it's like, oh my God, I'm like the old person. Like, I'm 55 years old. Now I could, like, be in communities. You know, this 55 plus thing. I'm like, okay. I'm in art. But anyway. Yeah, see, one of my art people. Anyway, I went into a rehab in Pasadena, and again, I walked into the door, and everybody was old. Everybody looked like they had a motorcycle, and or they were a cholo. And the women were, like, missing teeth. They had track marks. They had, like, deep track marks, you know. And they had been living some lives, right? So then all of a sudden, I felt like I didn't belong again. Now, I'm not worthy because I'm too young. I have all of my teeth. And I, you know, and I had some track marks, but they weren't deep enough, you know? And I wanted some missing teeth, and I wanted some track marks because I wanted to fit in, you know? And they found out I was 23, and they would be like, oh, I pounded more cottons than you shot, and blah, 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 blah. They would say all these things to make me feel like I didn't belong, you know? And I started to hear, instead of all of the differences, I started to hear my same story. So there'd be this old lady, she was probably like 30, like sharing, you know, and all of a sudden oh my God, she's talking about not being enough. You know, we didn't have the same exact story, but I kept hearing this, like, same through line of, like, my story. Then there'd be this guy with a long ZZ Top beard and he had a swastika on his arm, and he would be telling my story. And I was like, whoa, this dude, you know, like, he's telling my story too, you know, because they were talking about all that stuff that I was carrying around for so many years, these things, these beliefs that I believed in about me that made me never fit in any, even if everybody was black or everybody was a girl or everybody was, you know, gay, I didn't fit in. You know, I always had some way that there was no way that we were the same, you know. But then I started hearing this, like, oh yeah, I started hearing my story over and over and over again, and all of a sudden I couldn't, like, not listen, you know. And I thought that I knew everything because, first of all, I was in my 20s, I was 23, so I knew everything. And second, because I had already been in rehab, so I was like, I'll read. You know, like, because I already knew, I could recite all of the steps, I knew everything, you know, and, but I didn't know, you know, I hadn't actually done a step, I just could recite them. And I, you know, I ended up staying in rehab for 6 months, and after that was when you could stay in rehab for 6 months. And then after that, I was in sober living for a year, and I was in Pasadena. I grew up in Venice, the West Side. I'm back on the West Side now. But it was like a whole, you know, like, that's far. Especially when you don't have a car. Like, that's far away from each other. And I started to, you know, find my people, my tribe, I started going to meetings with these people and signing up to, you know, be a secretary or a chip person or this or that. So, you know, I started to get to know people. I had, you know, some sort of community that was building. I was really into service a lot. And I remember I was like the literature chair in like, I forget, the West Side, or maybe it was Hollywood, I can't remember. And you know, I just wore that as a badge. I was like, I'm the literature chair. Like, do you know who I am? I'm the literature chair. So as time went on, you know, and I started doing things that were different, that was different from what I would normally be doing, you know, I started, you know, feeling like, I remember someone was saying, you need to look in the mirror and you have to say, I'm worthy, I am worthy, I am worthy. And I was like, that's not going to work. That's so stupid, you know. But I did it, you know, and it started to roll off my tongue a little bit more, you know. And, you know, and then I was staying clean as longer than I had ever stayed clean before, you know. So that was like, oh, look at me, you know. And then maybe I got a cake or something. I was like, oh, you know, I'm in this thing, you know. And as time went on, you know, just getting, you know, it's the practice of this program, right? Like, you don't just get it like, okay, now, you know, I'm going to meetings and now this is it. It's like practicing when things happen, like when there's good times and there's bad times, and you stay clean through the good times and the bad times, and you're like, whoa, I can't believe I made it through that. You know, that gives you a little more esteem, or gave me a little more esteem for the next thing that would pop up, you know. Like, I lost a girlfriend, and I'm like, you know, oh God, I'm never gonna survive this. And then I survived, you know, and I happened to get another girlfriend, you know, and that was like, oh, okay. And, you know, as I practiced doing these things, you know, and I had to, instead of reciting the steps, I actually started to do the steps, you know, and it took me a long time, and I'm not gonna lie, it took me a long time to like say, okay, I'm gonna do these steps. You know, like, I existed in the rooms for a long time before I said, okay, let me, maybe, you know, now everything is just shit and I need to like grow, because I noticed that everybody else was growing, but I was still kind of the same, you know. And I always heard, oh, the answers are in the steps. The answers are in the steps. And I was like, but it's like homework. I'm like, I don't want to do it. I'm like, what's that going to do? You know, and I did it. And, you know, I ended up doing a six step, and, you know, I've done this with my tribe here in the first row, where it really got into the meat and the, I should say the tofu and the veggies. Really got into the tofu and the veggies and everything. And I started to see that, you know, this thing, this unworthiness and this not enoughness kept coming up and coming up, you know, in my fourth step and then, you know, my fifth step. And, you know, and there are these groups of questions that were like, what did you, you know, it would ask you the facts of what happened, you know, and then it's like, what did you believe, you know? And something started to change in my head, because now all of a sudden, oh, these are beliefs, these aren't real things, you know, this is just something that I've been carrying along with me for forever, you know. It's not necessarily what's actually true, it's just my belief. And then it, there was another, you know, there's a group of questions. Anyway, it gets down to the exact nature of why you're reacting, or why your character defenses are the way that they are, you know. Why I'm popping off here and I'm, you know, curling up over there, you know, and I'm not looking at things head on, and I'm not growing, and I'm not changing. So as I did that, it started to open me up, you know, and I started walking around now, because now I understood, like, oh, you know, I am worthy. I am beautiful. It's okay that you know, I'm cis woman. It's okay that I'm a lesbian. And I'm a vegan, and I'm a recovering addict. So, like, I'm just a bunch of shit. and, you know, I had to accept those things and see them for what they really were. And they weren't things that were holding me back. I was the one that was holding me back, you know. And all of a sudden, things started changing for me, you know. And I was in some meeting, and this guy said that he writes himself love letters. And he said that he does it every night. He just writes himself these love letters. He sends them off, and he, you know, and then they come back to him. And I said, oh, that's pretty interesting. I'm going to do that, you know. And I started writing myself these love letters. And at first, it was just like love notes. Like, oh, Tracy, I think you're cool. You're this or that. And I would send it with a stamp, and it comes back to me, a whole thing. And then it started getting expensive because I was doing it a lot. I'm like, all right, maybe I should just write it in this journal, you know. So I started writing all these letters to myself. And then these letters started to become this like romance with myself that, you know, I started to really see who I was, you know, who I presented and who I really was, you know. And there's something that happens when it's coming from within, you know, because I'm channeling through, okay, I'm getting weird, I know, but I'm channeling through spirit, and I'm writing down all of these things that are so wonderful and beautiful about me. And I fell in love with me. I fell in love with me, you know? And yeah, I was like, man, this girl's cute. You know? I even made love to me a few times. A few, a lot of times. Okay, a lot of times. But it changed my perspective on who I was, you know. And then all of a sudden, I was that little girl again, you know. I like walked in the room and people were like, oh, hi, Tracy. Oh my God, you know. And like, I could feel all of that love and all of that beauty, and I no longer was holding on to all this shit that I thought was awful about me. All of a sudden, I was this beautiful woman who could stand here right now and talk to all of you, you know? And that's what we get in this program, you know? Narcotics Anonymous just seems to clear all the shit, you know? I was in rehab when I was 17, and there was this counselor that said, Tracy, you're like a diamond. And I was like, shh. She really sees me, you know? And then she said, with a big pile of shit on top of it. I was like, what? Like, what is she? And then she says, all you gotta do is you gotta wipe the shit off of you. You just gotta keep wiping the shit so that you can shine, you know? And that's what I feel like this program has helped me to do. Hello. Is just let go of all of this like shit, you know. And it doesn't mean that all of a sudden, you know, I've done the work and now I don't feel like unworthy sometimes, you know. I feel unworthy sometimes, you know. I feel up and down and not enough, you know. Like the shit creeps in, you know. It hasn't just disappeared for me, but I have evidence, you know, through the people that I have in my life, through the, you know, this community of Narcotics Anonymous, that I am worthy, that, you know, I am beautiful. I am, you know, all of these wonderful things that, you know, I've learned about myself in this program. And yeah, and I get to be that little girl, you know, who is just this little guiding light. And I'm grateful to be speaking to you guys, and I'm really grateful that I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you.
thank both our speakers for sharing their experience. Steven has been asked to read this for today and close the meeting.